The Minor Principles. Chapter 9. Balance. We now begin the consideration of some of the minor principles, which may help us in the proper application of Christian faith, obedience, and love. They might also be helpful to men who are not Christians, if there is any desire to rise above the animal plane of unenlightened selfishness. There are times when local conditions so obscure the light of the sun that a lamp is needed to show us the right way. So there are times when these minor rules of life may be of very real service to those who will use them. Often they are repudiated by men who need them most. For it seems natural for a man to hate even an abstract principle if his intelligence tells him that it will convey to him a reproof. Again, they resemble lamps in this. They are not appreciated by men whose conduct will not bear investigation, and they are useless to us if we throw them away. If, however, we make intelligent use of them, neither minimizing their value nor expecting too much, they will serve us well. First, then, we will take the principle of balance. As with other principles, it applies on several planes, and almost anything that can be affirmed regarding it on the lowest plane can be applied to all others. Farmers know the importance of having a well-balanced load when carrying the hay or wheat in time of harvest. An ill-balanced load puts a strain on cart and horse and ropes and on the nerves of all who have to do with it. The lopsidedness becomes accentuated with every shake of the journey, and if the distance is great, there is grave danger of disaster. All this may be affirmed of the ill-balanced business, or national constitution, or human mind. We need not even point the distinction between the load of hay, which cannot play any intelligent part to change its condition, and the mind of man, which is amenable to reason. A large part of the human mind is as incapable of initiating any reform as the dead mass of hay. In either matter, it is the will of man that needs to act, whether to order the hands to rebuild the imbalanced load, or the intellect to reconstruct the mental outlook. Sometimes the laborer who has put up a faulty load is as obstinate and awkward as the most prejudiced and fanatical of religious egoists. He has put the load together, and what he does is right. He would sooner believe that there was something wrong with the law of gravitation than admit that he was in any way at fault. Nothing can be effected to correct the lack of balance until the will commands that the work shall be taken in hand. The human mind is composite, with intellect, imagination, and feelings, all subject to the will. The subjection, however, is not very complete, and there are many rebellions against the ruler. In most minds, feeling plays too large a part, and if the feeling is of the wrong kind, a serious lack of balance is the result. Often, then, the will is perverted and hardened into obstinacy, while feeling, growing with the food it continually seeks, thrusts out reason, vitiates the imagination, causes the whole mind to become increasingly unbalanced, and it may be, at last, brings it down with a crash. Fortunately, it is frequent in human experience that the provocation of feeling changes its direction, opposing influences checking each other, just as the uneven gusts of wind in a gale steady the swaying steeples or chimneys so that they do not fall. There comes a time when the man corrects his lack of balance, though he may refuse to admit his error even to himself. To admit the error would be to accept responsibility for so much evil that has already been wrought. We cannot often help others, and they cannot help us, by a severe condemnation of errors, and by vehement insistence on just the truth, which for the moment is most obnoxious. It is not only legitimate, but it is surely commendable to be tactful in pointing out the follies of fellow sinners. If the farmer storms at the faulty laborer and harshly criticizes his work, there is an end of all goodwill, and probably no correction of the error. If he reminds the erring one that there are some rough places in the road home, and that it is important to have a well-balanced load, the man will probably agree. He will move a few forkfuls of hay, and will then strain at the rope mightily in order to correct his faulty binding and make the load safe. Better still, with goodwill secured and no ugly feelings aroused, he will take pains to build more scientifically next time. If we are to derive benefit from the consideration of this principle of balance, we must approach it in the abstract without any desire to make special applications of it, except to ourselves. We admit that lack of balance in the minds of other men has often caused great evil. We may be prepared to admit to ourselves that we have sometimes formed ill-balanced judgments, laying too much stress on one phase of duty to the inevitable neglect of other duties equally important. How can we ensure that in the future we shall sustain a better balance with every phase of Christian faith, obedience, love, and service receiving proper attention? Well, if we have a desire in this direction, it is one step forward. Unfortunately, the calm survey of the subject may so easily be disturbed by some provocation of feeling, and then not only balance may go, but the desire for it evaporates too. While we have the right desire, however, there is a possible avenue of development to which we can hardly set any limit. There is a truth regarding the mind of man which is of outstanding importance and value to those who are able to receive it. As with many other truths, it has been the subject of unhelpful discussions and fanciful suggestions which have obscured facts and have, perhaps, tended to repel some students who, in the absence of the doubtful discussion, would have been attracted. There can be no doubt as to the main fact, for all intelligent human beings are conscious of it in themselves. Stated in the simplest possible way, it is the fact that a man is, or at least can be, aware of the condition and the changing processes of his own mind. You not only think, but you are aware that you think. You feel. You remember. You are amused. You are angry. You are prejudiced. You are scornful. You feel flattered. You are humiliated. And in all these mental processes, your individuality is aware of the feelings and influences that enter the mind. You have to preside over the conflict of many thoughts and feelings, encouraging or inhibiting as you think well. The higher the mentality, the greater is the quality of awareness. In the lowest types of human mind, it is very slight. When a man is completely insane, it does not exist at all. It is possible to cultivate this quality of awareness with great advantage in the matter of improved balance. It is not safe, however, to assume that it will come with ordinary education, great as the benefits of such culture may be. It is not safe to assume that it will be developed by intensive study of the Bible, although that is the most helpful influence of all. A highly cultured man may be deplorably unbalanced and sadly lacking in capacity to recognize his own mental processes. An ardent student of the Bible may be so lacking in balance that his condition eventually passes into that of religious mania. In neither case is there any reproach to the studies themselves. The failure is in the individuals. It is possible that to some readers, we may render a service in merely pointing out this peculiar capacity of the human mind to recognize its own condition and to be aware of the manner in which it is influenced. Although, to all intelligent people, the fact is obvious when once it is pointed out, it is quite possible to go through life without ever having thought of it, and therefore, without ever having cultivated the capacity. Suppose, for instance, that this truth is first presented to a man who detests the study of psychology and views every effort to throw light on mental processes with grave suspicion. His first instinct may be to sweep away even this simple truth as quite unworthy of consideration. Suppose, however, that we succeed in convincing him that we are not trying to teach psychology or philosophy or any of the things that he mistrusts. We are only calling attention to an obvious but marvelous fact in the fearfully and wonderfully constructed mind of man. Perhaps then, the impatient one will grudgingly admit that we have stated a fact, although he will probably add that it is such a self-evident and simple fact as to be unworthy of mention. It is possible that he may have sufficient intelligence to go further and say to himself, "As illustrating the point, I am aware that I mistrust all attempts to probe into the depths of the mind. I am aware of the main reason for this mistrust. It was the unmitigated nonsense talked by so-and-so." Perhaps his thought will advance a stage further, and he will perceive that his resentment against the doubtful speculations of an advanced psychologist had almost led him to repudiate a simple and elementary truth that can be recognized by common sense. Finally, he may admit, to himself at least, that he had never really thought about this power of the mind to which we have drawn attention. He may say to himself, "Yes, I am aware that I have been prejudiced against certain subjects, and I am aware that while there has been cause for this feeling, there has been no adequate reason. I must be on my guard and not allow this feeling to bias my judgments." Such a man is then making progress. As a result of attention being drawn to a simple and obvious truth, he will make tremendous strides in his mental awareness, with very beneficial results in the matter of improved balance. As a matter of fact, if we are normally intelligent people, we must all be aware at times of putting overemphasis on a line of thought or feeling that happens to be prominent for the moment. We may say, "No language can be too strong to do justice to this matter," when we really mean that no language can be too strong for the expression of our feelings. In our inmost heart, we know that we have overstepped the bounds of justice, and that is a negation of the law of love. There are some men who, under the influence of feeling, will fire up, speak, or act hastily, and then, just as quickly, recover their balance. They are aware that they were momentarily unjust, and they try to make amends. This is very much better than a permanent lack of balance and permanent injustice. Nevertheless, in that brief period of instability, great harm may have been wrought. It would be so much better if the mental awareness could be so cultivated as to be conscious of the evil influence of passion when the brainstorm first began. There is a physical sense of balance which preserves men from falling. Some students of humanity have regarded this as a separate sense. It comes into play when there is a deviation from the perpendicular and tells us how to correct the error. If a man is inebriated, he may fail to act, and he falls. If he is only partly drugged, he may retain sufficient sense of balance to be aware of any considerable deviation, so that he is able to keep on his feet, although he staggers. A normal man has the sense so well developed that he can walk on the level or up and down stairs without any difficulty. An abnormally developed sense of balance may enable a man to walk along a tight rope without fear of falling. In the same way, our mental sense of balance should come into play when mental stability is disturbed. If a man allows himself to be drugged by wrong thought or feeling, he may not be aware of the influence at work. He may even become so unbalanced that his mind gives way, just as the drunkard falls. Or he may become aware of his lack of balance just in time to avert a fall, so that he staggers but retains his sanity. It is possible, however, so to cultivate this quality of the mind that we are sensitive even to a slight deviation, and the corrective is applied immediately. If a man is unconscious of ever having been at all unbalanced, it is almost safe to assume that he has never been anything else. Sometimes, on the other hand, we find that one whose balanced judgments have commanded our admiration, and whose temper has seemed so serene that no provocation of feeling could arise to cause prejudice, has yet made the confession that he has often become conscious of a deplorable lack of balance. His mind has been aware of the provocation and the natural tendency, and this quality of awareness has found the remedy. The world is full of unbalanced men and women, nearly all engaged in work of destruction, and so little aware of their condition that it may be truthfully affirmed of them that they know not what they do. We may well try to assist each other to maintain a better balance so that all may be able to render better service. Probably the greatest enemy is pride. We are reminded of one of the evils from which Christian love must be free. If men are puffed up, they will not be balanced, either in their study of the Bible or in more general education. Neither will they develop the priceless quality of awareness, for they have already admitted the worst enemy of all into the mind, and they are not even aware of that. In such a condition, only the rod of the Lord can save them. If, however, a man is not consumed with one of the many forms of disguised pride, there is hope for him in the quiet contemplation of the interrelationship of principles. Many principles may throw a light on balance, and in turn, balance must be applied to all of them. Be temperate. Be sober. And let your moderation be known to all men.